Welcome to East Meets West, episode 149. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
We are back to the classic East Meets West format now.
No, the neoclassic, because the classic is the one outside.
Well, I suppose the classic was over in San Francisco in my old house before I moved.
Yes.
But, that... I just mean that no guests this week.
Format-wise.
No topic, no agenda.
No, although...
Oh, wait, that's a different podcast.
No. I remember I brought this up with Eileen about the injections she was taking, or the injections
that's
she got.
That's true. We don't have an agenda, but we do have a topic that you wanted to talk about, the flu shots.
Yes. And she was very adamant that...
Yeah, so go ahead. Eileen got a flu shot, came to work, and all her coworkers are telling her that was bunk.
No, just
coworkers being you and Serafina.
Yes. Well, I didn't say it was like, I didn't. My argument was, what's the purpose for a flu shot for a healthy adult?
I will tell you the two purposes that I believe why people should get flu shots, but I will raise my hand quickly and say I am a hypocrite because I did not get a flu shot, and I rarely ever do. In fact, I may never have gotten a flu shot. So I am a horrible person, but. Here's why you should get a flu shot, and this comes from the Mayo Clinic and the CDC.
Okay.
And I mean, this is real stuff. First of all, I don't mean to steal your thunder, but I know one objection is they never have the same strain that actually infects people. Right?
That's one of the many complaints I have.
So the argument is that even though they don't have the exact strain, you will probably feel fewer symptoms. In fact, studies have shown that you do have a much milder case of the flu even if you get a different strain, because the flus that they are inoculating you against are similar. One example is avian flu. Avian flu can be deadly, but because the A virus in the flu shot is similar, people who get a flu shot are not at risk of dying from avian flu. They'll get a milder form of it. That's you know, your personal benefit. The bigger reason that they say you should get a flu shot is herd inoculation. So if everybody gets the flu shot, flu is passed less often from person to person and is less likely to hit the people that are that it is most dangerous for, the young and the elderly. So if it was magically everyone agreed, I'm going to get a flu shot, and everyone out voluntarily got a flu shot, it would reduce the amount of fatalities from the flu, because you wouldn't be carrying it. A lot of people don't get the flu, but carry it and pass it from person to person.
I don't know. I mean, like, I was just looking up at Wikipedia before I came here, and one of the things was, like, the efficacy on healthy adults. I'm not talking about children. I'm not talking about the elderly, but healthy, you know, my age adults. I mean, the benefits are minimal. I mean, every time, and this is anecdotally, this is totally not based off any figures other than my own experiences, every place that I've ever been to that's offered or has some sort of flu shot or a flu inoculation, everyone who's ever taken it, and while not this happens every season, more often than not, they become sick within a week.
Yeah, now I've heard that objection, which is that the flu shot gives you the flu because it is using a disabled version of the flu virus, but actual clinical studies have shown there's zero chance. I mean, it's an infinitesimal chance of you actually contracting the flu from the flu shot.
And, you know, it's, I mean, I understand the bit, but that is probably my biggest issue. And having been through, six years at Tech TV's EDTV where it was offered, I've never taken it. And I have not been ever sick with the flu for an entire 6 years. The only time I actually did contract the flu was when Patrick Norton came into work complaining about congestion and general kind of a rundown feeling, blaming on his allergies and taking his copious amounts of Sudafed to no effect, and then grabbing me and laughing in front of my face, thereby passing his cooties. And that's a non-scientific term, cooties,
right.
onto me. And that literally walked me for a day. I was out for like a day. And then I came back the next day.
Well, you're an example of the person who will kill the elderly and the children then, because you're not going to get the flu. It sounds like you have a pretty good immune system for fighting off the flu, but you should get the flu shot to help prevent yourself from carrying it to other people. And that part is pretty rock solid science. And it's it's a tough sell because people are sitting there. Even people, let's not even say that you're a mean person. You're like, I don't care about the elderly and the children. Let's say you.
I am a mean person.
Let's
go
say
ahead.
You actually do.
You can
care.
Say that.
Let's say you do. Let's
sure.
just imagine.
Let's
that
go into fantasy land. Go into fantasy land.
It's still, it's just in our nature as human beings to be less motivated to go to the trouble to go get it for that reason. I mean, that's not to say that plenty of people don't do it, but it's if you get deflected, like, oh, I have to go downstairs and I'm really busy right now. If it's going to cure you of the flu, then you're going to go do
it. Well, if my immune system can take care of it, how is it passed off? If it's
In other words, you get the flu.
And I'm a carrier, but I
But your immune system fights it off. However, you get it enough that you just don't feel the symptoms and you pass it along. If you have the actual influenza flu shot in there, it gets killed quicker, much quicker than if your body has to fight it off because you already have the antibodies and therefore it never gets a chance to replicate and pass along.
I don't know. I think
I'm saying
I
know you know better.
I say focus on the focus on the vulnerable groups.
But that's where the herd immunity comes in.
But I believe, I don't know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I believe in kind of having your body adjust and learn.
You believe in killing. No, go ahead and say. You believe in killing off the weak. It's bad for humanity.
No, it's very evolutionary. I'm sorry. You got to thin the herd at some point.
You don't believe in the greater good.
I believe in following the...
Let the wolves get them.
Why not? Isn't that what we would do? And actually, probably not. Because the old didn't live that long back in the day.
No, I mean I'm
not trying to be callous, but it just seems that, you know, it seems like a lot of immunology is based on personal contact and having your body experience and fighting it off.
That's what the flu shot is. It is essentially giving you the flu, but in a way that's not going to cause the symptoms because it's a disabled version of the virus.
Yeah, I'm not too.
You're not convinced on the way vaccines work? You don't believe in vaccines?
I got the measles. Oh, actually, there is no vaccine for the measles.
Vaccines work, Roger. You can't dispute that.
I'm not saying. But who are they given to?
Huh?
Who are they given to? They're given to the young. So
they're
just
given to everybody.
They're given when you're young. Most of the shots
are given to everybody.
Most of the vaccines that are critical are usually given to you when you're an infant.
I'm missing your point, I guess.
Why? I'm just saying, get the flu shots to the kids, give them to the elderly, skip the rest.
But then you still have a better chance of the elderly and the children getting a strain of flu not covered by the flu shot and dying of it because you don't have herd immunity. If you want to lower that chance to zero, then you need to immunize everyone.
Put people in a bubble if you want to reduce it to zero.
Well, it's
and
a,
wash your
well,
hands.
It's matters of gradation. I mean, it's easy to say that. It's easy to go like, oh, come on. There's only so much you can do, and that's true. But I mean, these are pretty respected scientists saying like, you know, really, we'll save people's lives if everybody got the flu shot.
I'm saying wash.
But the responsibility for that person who dies from the flu is distributed across millions of people. So you don't feel it yourself. You don't like, well, it's not just because of me not getting the flu shot that someone's grandmother died. But that's essentially what's going on.
I don't know. I think your fantasy land tale is more apocryphal than you think. No, I mean, I firmly believe that I don't know. I mean, I understand the whole point of getting the herd immunized, but I don't know. It just seems that...
I don't know. I don't want to go to the trouble.
No.
It's a real pain in the ass.
No, it's not even that.
I just don't.
I don't like getting shots, too. I got infected by one of those... not a flu, but it was a... What was it? It was not even... It was just a... I think it was giving blood or something. It was more of an issue of hygiene on the syringe holder's part or whatever apparatus it was. But I don't know. I'm not convinced. Someone out there convince me. If you want to convince me, go ahead.
What would it take to convince you? Because I just gave you pretty much the solid line with references from respected sources.
Draw the line from me to a gravesite. Well, not my gravesite, but to someone.
So you want to know the person that died of the flu last year because you didn't get that. Is that what you're saying? That's the only thing that would convince you?
I say if anyone's sick, just stay home.
That That's great advice. That really is.
I mean, seriously,
sick, don't go out. But that doesn't absolve
me
the
of
argument.
The of
it doesn't
say, absolve.
And therefore, no one needs to get flu shots unless you're old. As long as everybody just stayed.
So what you're saying is, I carry the weight of humanity upon my shoulders.
No, actually,
that's,
I'm not.
That's what you're.
No,
well,
no,
that's
no,
what.
I'm not.
Then
I'm
what are you saying?
You carry a very small part of the weight of humanity on your shoulder, and that's why you're not motivated to go. If you had that,
then
direct,
if you know why I'm not motivated to go, why are you complaining? Why I don't want to go?
You shouldn't go.
Because now there's a moral.
It's a question of individual versus social good, and when it's not individual, when you don't have that direct line between you and Granny's gravesite, it makes it harder for people to work up the motivation to actually do what's good for everybody. Hmm. It's like the broken window thing, where you know one broken window leads a bunch of other people to break a bunch of windows because they don't think anybody's responsible for fixing them.
Uh-huh, and that leads to?
Well, it leads to vandalism,
crime,
and all of that sort of thing. It's a
indecency.
Sort of thing because there is no direct line from you, but we do know there isn't.
So
no.
There's no guilt. I feel better. Thank
no,
you.
But it's not about guilt. It's about it's about the fact that if everybody got the flu shot, people would die. You have to think in aggregate. You can't think individualistic about this. That's just the way the science works.
Mm-hmm. Thinning the herd.
So you're back to that. This actually leads quite nicely into this other thing I wanted to talk about. I put this up on my Delicious feed.
The O'Reilly radar?
Yeah, Tim O'Reilly pointed out that one of the reasons that he favors combating climate change is because of something called Pascal's Wager. Pascal's Wager says that I shouldn't try to summarize Pascal's Wager, but let me just read what he says. If catastrophic global warming turns out not to happen, the steps we'd take to address it are still worthwhile. This is essentially what I was saying the other week. Given that there's enough, even a reasonable risk of disruptive climate change, any sensible person should decide to act. It's insurance. The risk of your house burning down is small, yet you carry homeowner's insurance. You don't expect to total your car, but you know that the risk is there, and again, most people carry insurance. You don't expect catastrophic illness to strike you down, but again, you invest in health insurance. You don't need to be 100% sure that the worst fears of climate scientists are correct in order to act. All we need to think about are the consequences of being wrong. And then he lines out five things that he thinks would happen if there is no human-caused climate change, but we can go ahead and combat it. One, we've made a major investment in renewable energy. This is an urgent issue even in the absence of global warming because there's only so much oil. We've invested in a potent new source of jobs, a far better source of stimulus than some of the ideas being proposed. Three, we've improved our national security by reducing our dependence on foreign oil.
Potentially.
We've mitigated the enormous off-the-books. That's a good point because it depends on what you replace it with, right? We've mitigated the enormous off-the-books economic losses from pollution. This is something that a lot of people want to sweep under the rug.
That's my argument. For environment for tightened environmental and regulation is that instead of focusing on these kind of global climate or at least human generated global climate change, focus people on the things that directly affect them every day because they're no less problematic or damaging not only to the environment but to human health. Smog being the prime one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that if you tackle and focus those issues on that, in aggregate, it will help alleviate a lot of those issues that people often...
Yeah, a lot of people try to make a free market defense of oil. And the fact of the matter is, oil's very subsidized.
Oh, yeah, totally.
China itself estimates that they lose about 10% of their GDP to off-the-books losses from pollution.
Yeah, no, but that's my point. If you factor things like, water cleanup... Superfund cleanup. You include things acid rain, nitrogen enriched.
Or even less dramatic, highways.
Yeah.
The railroads build their own railroads.
Yes.
The auto industry does not build its own highways. Now, you could argue whether they should or not, but there is a fact that there is a subsidization of the auto industry there.
Well, not just auto, but commerce as well.
Trucking and commerce.
But that's one of those. It's one of those things that I feel that people are looking at this kind of one grand atomic or at least giant asteroid issue when, you know, and that I think that kind of puts off people. If you tell people, hey, look, we should move away from combustion engine based, you know, modes of transportation because, hey, look, your kids are getting asthma. Every day you wake up, you drive, you commute in, you sit in 3 hours of traffic, you know, that should normally take 30 minutes. You focus people on those. Yeah, people will understand. It's like, okay, I can appreciate it because it's something I deal with every day. And now if you kind of, you know, for me, because I feel that in many ways it's abstract for a lot of people when you talk about, you know, the earth warming up, the, you know, the glaciers melting. They can't see it directly. They can hear news reports about it. They can read about it. But, you know, it's one of those things until you actually experience it, it doesn't really kind of affect you emotionally, or at least in a way that would kind of force you to change or kind of say, hey, I got to change these things.
And number five, just to complete the five.
The circle.
Renewing our industrial base, investing in new industries rather than propping up old ones. The costs are similar to the costs incurred by record companies in the switch to digital music distribution, or the cost in newspapers implicit in the rise of the web. What he's pointing out is that a lot of times people say, like, well, all of this talk about carbon reduction and everything is bad for the economy. And the fact of the matter is it's probably not. It's bad for certain industries, perhaps, if they're not innovative. But it's actually overall, everything I've ever read, an overall net good for the economy because it spurs innovation and provides more jobs.
I'm more of changing over because I don't believe on resting an entire economic base on one primary source of...
Well, and that's the thing is we've actually reduced our innovation by favoring. The government has favored one particular energy industry over, you know, we got rid of all the trolley cars. We got rid of the electric cars in the teens and 20s. And we really, because of the...
Except
the
lobbies, in San Francisco.
The lobbies of Ford and... Yeah, that's right. We kept the cable cars.
It was GM... Well, I mean, the whole argument was L.A. back in the day. I mean, the counter-argument also is if you look at back at what L.A. was back in the 40s and what it is now, it's the difference in size is, what, 3-4 times?
Oh.
I mean,
it's
huge.
More, but yeah.
And you know, it's there was a lot of finagling and stuff, but
it wasn't just L.A. No. It happened in St. Louis. They got rid of their streetcars. It happened in Detroit. Well, I mean, it happened in almost every major city.
That was part and parcel with the rise of the interstate and urban renewal. I mean, these are a lot of.
But what I'm saying is, the auto industry and the oil industry got some favors. To push them ahead. It wasn't an entirely free
aerospace
market decision.
Well, aerospace, electronics, even network-centric technologies were spurred in part by a large amount of government largesse. I mean, the government spent money, which is kind of one of the arguments against when people say, well, the government shouldn't be in business. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean government needs to be in business, but it does need to lay the foundation.
Well, it's that line between the government's responsibility to provide infrastructure that the market wouldn't provide, which is often highways or electricity, you know, being used as examples of where it has succeeded in the past, or telephone. A lot of people think the internet should be done that way. It hasn't up till now. There's been government money thrown at it, but it really hasn't taken a big role in investing it. In fact, Obama's $6 billion in the stimulus plan for rural broadband is probably the biggest effort that's been proposed, I think, yet. Anyway, I mean, that's just a sideline. There's an argument to be had over whether the government overstepped in favoring the oil and gas and auto industry.
I mean, part of the reason is,
or whether it was a good thing because it, you know, got us cars.
I mean, you know, part of that was to generate enough domestic consumption in the U.S. to fund a lot of the growth programs.
Yeah.
The
United States went car reliant much earlier than the rest of the world.
Well, it's funny because all of that didn't really come out until after World War II. That's when you saw, I mean, partially because Europe was basically in ruin, and many parts of the world were not developed infrastructure wise in the same way. The concept of the interstate was new when Eisenhower brought it over from Germany. I mean, the whole concept
the Autobahn,
of having this huge stretch of... I mean, before then, it was like, you know, Route 66.
It was
two lanes.
Very romantic.
And,
right?
You know, if you wanted to get in, this is before cheap airfare, people took the rail lines to get from the East Coast to the West Coast. I mean, airlines were for the rich or people who had somewhere to be and their company would pay for it or their, you know, they had.
Even the family car wasn't really a concept till the 50s, I don't think. I mean, it may have been around, but it wasn't until the 50s that every family should have a car.
I mean, if you look at the movies from the 40s, everyone got on and off a bus.
Yeah, and got it, or taxis or trains.
There were very few family cars. Part of it was rationing. There just wasn't, you know, anything for you to buy because all the industries are tied up in generating, you know, arms, armaments, and stuff for the war.
Well, in the 30s, everyone was broke. In the 40s, like, you know, everybody was at war.
So it wasn't until the 50s, and then you kind of had that big push for a mass consumer consumption because you needed some way to generate the money you needed to do a lot of the things that the government at the time wanted to do. It was like, you know, expand the military, expand programs like the Marshall Plan, things that, you know, cost not just dollars.
Let's move on to some comments. We didn't get that many. Hope just that doesn't mean you didn't like the interview.
It was great, especially about the I went back to that site. Was it Road Food? Road Food.
Yeah.
I like it.
Good stuff. Vance wrote in, said, Tom, I did the same. This is at subbrilliant.com/EMW. Tom, I did the same with Lost, catching up in the middle of season two via iTunes. I actually watched the entire first season on my fifth generation iPod. Then recently I did the same with Heroes, watching from season one this fall through Netflix Watch instantly on my home computer. I actually caught up on Heroes halfway through the first season on the iPod as well. Anyway, Vance continues, I really do think this is a glimpse into the future where we insist on experiencing our content more efficiently. I never watch even a sporting event without giving it some lead time so that I can fast forward through commercials and timeouts. My son and I will go out and play catch for half an hour just for that purpose, thus replacing commercial time with fresh air and exercise. I get my radio time shifted through podcast as well, also with the commercials cut out. We are taking control of our content intake. Power to the people. Monetization must conform. Totally agree with you, Vance. I have not watched a commercial in ages, but I do pay for my Netflix account and did pay to watch those seasons of Lost from iTunes. So the money is still flowing from me to them and in a much more direct and easily calculated manner than some guess about how many products I will buy or brand awareness shoved into my brain through commercials.
I mean, the flip side of that is as that kind of, you know, commercial and program separation begin to fall apart, especially when you refer to broadcast television, I basically see a return back to like, hey, look, it's what do they call it when you have a direct product inside
product placement.
Product placement. I mean, you've already seen that. I mean, the new Knight Rider, all the cars are Fords, Ford Mustang, Ford F-150, Ford. So.
That reminds me, Roger, I'd like to take this moment to talk about smooth-smoking old drum tobacco from Grant's in San Francisco. Grant's on Market Street. If you want some good pipe tobacco.
You don't even have a pipe, do you?
I smoke a Grant.
Do you have a pipe?
Yeah, I do, actually. I just bought a pipe.
Are you that old?
I decided to just get old.
Oh, lovely.
Bought my pipe at Grant's. Grant's on Market Street in San Francisco.
I wish we got money from
them. I wish
them.
We did. Yeah.
I mean,
guys would be like podcast.
I mean, it's very you get that warm and fuzzy feeling when you say like, yeah, now we can get rid of like this commercial. No, it's just going to take another form.
Well, I think you're going to have the option. I think I think people like Vance are going to have the option to do what he's doing, which is that like, you know what? I'll pay $1.99 per episode not to have to watch the commercials. I'm cool with that. I think that will maybe not be an option on every single thing, but it will continue to be an option. But there's going to have to be other ways because not everybody's going to be willing to pay that much. And then there's all piracy will always be a problem in the corner. So you got to figure out other monetization models as well. And product placement is one of them.
I mean, the other thing is I think, especially when it comes to the web, way too much emphasis has been placed solely on advertising as a source of generating revenue. I mean, one of the topics we've talked about, in my place of employment, you talk about merchandise, you talk about other
Revision3.com.
Yes.
Great place to watch videos. If only they paid us for that, too.
They kind of sort of pay me, but in an indirect fashion.
CNET.com, a great place for technology.
You know, merchandising, doing other services that help, like, you know, whether it's like selling T-shirts, stickers, mugs. We need to get mugs.
Yeah.
East meets West mugs would be awesome.
We could just do Cafe Press Store. We've talked about that a million times. We should just do it.
Maybe we could just get a bunch of birthday candles with EMW and like group those together.
As a picture?
Like no,
a
East photo? No, East meets West birthday candles or candles. A candle set.
I'm not getting... Oh, you mean like E-A...
E-M-W.
Ah, gotcha.
Like it's a shape, but you get a little wick at the top and you set it on fire and you bring light and warmth.
Okay.
At least light.
It would help the people through this long winter of our discontent.
Yes. I don't know. It might extend into the summer. So what happens when it becomes a summer of discontent?
That's hot and sticky and gross.
And then you just throw stuff at people?
I guess. I don't know.
Lovely. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think it's, you know, so many things are changing and people are still trying to find a way to make money off it. And, you know, it could be one of those things where you pay a subscription. I actually favor a subscription model. I know people weren't for it. And I think part of the issue was that subscription models were very piecemeal. It was okay. You can get four shows from this guy, you know, for blah, 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 $12 a month. And then if you want to like, I also want to watch that show, that's another, you know, $10 to get another grouping of shows that you're not interested in.
Yeah, subscription model's problem too is that it doesn't really play well in the infinitely copyable universe of the internet. It's like, well, why should I pay for a subscription? I mean, maybe that in the NPR sense.
It seems to work all right when it comes to music, because I know a lot of people who've done the...
but it always has to be DRM'd.
It's true.
I don't think subscription is gonna stick around necessarily until we move to a more cloud-based system where people really do. Piracy's biggest enemy will be the cloud, where people are like, well, I don't want to have to torrent it and download it and keep it on my hard drive and deal with storage and filing. I just want to have it all available. So like a Pandora type situation or something where you can, or Lala actually is a better example, where it's all in a locker in the cloud and you just pay, you know, a monthly fee to be able to access all the music in the world. I think maybe in that way a subscription model works.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Is that what you're thinking?
Instead of aggregating all that content through a single, or at least maybe, you know, much fewer, instead of dealing with, you know, umpteen different companies, you're dealing with maybe three or two and you pay, you know, okay, I got $25 for these guys and maybe another 20 for this one. So I spend $45, but I get all these TV shows, get all this music.
Yeah, video hasn't gone there yet. The problem with video is they don't have the same
replayability
of music.
And that's
that's why I think you're seeing things like Hulu and Netflix and Juice.
Well, I think...
Where it's like, hey, just come here and stream it with limited commercials.
I think, that's true. But I think with video, especially with fans of it, I think, you know, the merchandising, the discs, actually selling the media is a big thing. Because I know I do that. Like, oh, I really like a show. I definitely buy
fewer DVDs than I used to, by far. But certain movies, certain TV shows, I buy the lost DVDs, even though I can go watch every lost episode on ABC.com for free. Because I want to have the DVDs and I want the extras. And I just, it's a collectible thing.
Yeah, or, you know, people can go in and I don't know. I'm not an advertising or sales guy, so I can't say. But I still think for some reason it just feels that relying solely on ad money to stay afloat somehow seems just, you know, it seems so limiting. There has to be something else you can do.
There's a combination of models, like the merchandising model that artists rely on. For music, I think has to be brought into the video space.
Well, merchandising and, of course, the live shows. So if people are willing to do the live shows.
You know, Lost did something really interesting in Hawaii, and I wonder if this is a prototype or just kind of a one-off, but they had a concert where they brought the Hawaiian Symphony Orchestra to play the music that had been arranged
for Lost,
and they had video playing up on the screen of different scenes. They brought Terry O'Quinn, who plays John Locke, on to do some readings in between songs, some kind of dramatic readings about the island. They had a couple other guests involved, and it had a great turnout.
I mean, the bigger issue down the road, though, is how do you get that initial capital to do a large show like Lost? I mean, you need to be able to write that in. You know, either you get like some sort of venture capital or you get an investment firm or you get a large studio who basically maintains all merchandising rights.
How do you justify large capital outlay in the current digital internet.
If all you can get is...
Whether you're a big studio or not. I mean, why is a big studio going to put big money into something?
I mean, that's... I'm sure that's a question you guys ask at CNET. We ask it all the time. It's like, you know, can we really afford to spend this much money on a show or a concept that we do not know?
Will we get the return?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, David is going on a long trip to the land of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and wants food recommendations. So if you got food recommendations for David, go to subbrilliant.com/EMW and throw them on there for him.
I've never been to St. Paul or Minneapolis.
I have been to Minneapolis for conferences, so my food choices have always been chosen for me. And I it's been so long ago. It was in like the early 90s. I'm sure the restaurants that I ate, even if I could remember them, have probably changed or gone away since then.
Yeah, I know nothing.
All right.
Nothing.
Sorry, David. We can't help, but maybe others can. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
And we'll be back hopefully probably next week.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So take care till then.